Dave Wilcox mentioned during Joys and Concerns that he spent the weekend with the youth at a youth retreat. His partner in crime there is Jennifer Olson. And during last Saturday's religious education retreat, Jennifer taught us a new little game. And it's a getting to know you game where you pick from a deck of cards, and depending on what you draw, you have to tell a personal story, a certain kind of personal story. So if you pick the Jack, for example, you have to tell a story about someone you know named Jack. And if you pick clubs, you have to tell a personal funny story. While people were going around telling those stories, I was reminded of how important stories are in making sense of the things that happen in our lives. Sometimes we tell stories. Sometimes the stories tell us. Such is the story about men. This story started a long, long time ago, and it has been telling us a fundamental lie about the nature of males. Maybe it was a useful story a long, long time ago, but either way, the story no longer serves us, and in fact, it is doing us all harm. Several years ago, I awoke to this story and to my part in keeping it alive. Some of you know that there are three Unitarian Universalist seminaries around the country. On the East Coast, there's Harvard, in Chicago, Meadville, Lombard, and Star King School in Berkeley. Not surprising, given its left coast orientation, Star King is the most liberal out of the three. When I entered Star King Seminary in 2002, there were only two heterosexual white males in my class of 25. Together, we engaged with the anti-oppression work that is so vital to the mission of that school. We talked about the institutionalized oppression of people of color, gay, lesbian, transgender people, women, people with disabilities, children, the elderly. At first, the women in the class didn't notice that we were talking about men and oppression, actually, in a way that put those two men squarely in the camp of the oppressor. We didn't stop to think how those two men might have felt being lumped in with haters, abusers, killers. As our male colleagues began to speak up, they tried to explain to us how the patriarchy is a system that also victimizes men. They tried to tell their stories of how the cultural demands made on men lead them to deny the fullness of their being. But I'm ashamed to say, the rest of us didn't listen. We dismissed their stories. Polite conversation turned into battles about who was more oppressed than the other. We fought, we cried, we left the room. As uncomfortable as that whole experience was, it led me to a profound shift in the way I think about and relate to men. I started to understand how society's expectations hurt men and women and transgendered people, those for whom gender identity lies beyond the traditional definitions. Those really difficult classroom conversations led me to wonder about my own role in perpetuating that old story about men. In that story, the prototypical male follows a script of manhood that has been handed to him by his father, his community, and even his mother. The script tells him that physical violence is superior to any other force, that exercising power over others is the only way to succeed, and that the role of men in our society is to wield that power in church, in the workplace, and in the families. When I would read newspaper articles about the poor condition of men in our society, that the suicide rates are 4 times higher for men, that males comprise 93% of all people incarcerated, that men die a decade earlier than women, I didn't realize that the old story of patriarchy might have something to do with what's happening to our men. I would just shake my head and say to myself, well, that's just the way men are, right? I mean, men are naturally aggressive. Men are naturally violent. Men cannot express themselves emotionally. And men are inherently more interested in solving problems than building relationships. The problem with this and all stereotypes is that it is a lie. When we tell false stories about anyone in our community, we diminish the unfolding of that person's unique abilities and capacities, the powers of his or her soul. William Ellery Channing, the 19th century Unitarian minister, taught us that everyone is endowed with capacities for doing good in the world. Human beings are therefore inherently worthy and good. Now, this was a radical notion in Channing's day, when most of the people around him were sure that the inherent nature of human beings was depraved and sinful. So why don't we always do good in the world? Well, I think it's because there are forces in life that inhibit our ability to develop those capacities and to unfold our soul. One of those forces is patriarchy. Patriarchy, or what I've been calling the old story about men, perpetuates an image of manhood that suppresses the capacities of the soul of women and the souls of men. The women's liberation movement revealed how women suffer under the old story about the superiority of manhood. And now we are seeing how this story also oppresses men, preventing them from bringing forth gifts that do not conform to the warped image of masculinity. This old story is a suit of armor that every male must wear in order to succeed as a real man. Once he puts on that armor, a man may look fabulous on the outside, as confident and self-assured as the master of kung fu in his full-body armor of yak leather. What can't be seen are the parts of himself that he had to cut off in order to get into the suit. Which powers of the soul did he have to amputate? The power to respond to beauty? The presence of the holy? The powers of affection and imagination? The powers of nurturing and connection? The powers of intimacy? Now, in some families, this old story of manhood is the only one that boys hear over and over again from their fathers and from their mothers. There are other families, though, telling very different stories of male identity, stories that teach boys to love broadly and feel deeply. Our own Joe Fissler grew up in a household where he and his father told poetry to each other. And then there are men who grew up with the old story and wrote new stories of manhood as they grew into adulthood and even as elders. I've met these men. Some of you are sitting right here in this room. They talk about their liberation through relationships with other men, how they open themselves up during men's retreats and men's groups. I believe these experiences are so powerful because for many, it was the very first time that they were truly seen as the full and complex person they really are. The Dalai Lama was able to see the master of Kung Fu in this way. While others saw the costume of a warrior and the trail of broken bodies, the Dalai Lama saw through the armor into the human being. He saw a spiritual being with feelings and longings and a graceful body that could sense the beauty in all of nature. The Dalai Lama knew that the master of Kung Fu was able to only see the ugliness in life, unable to truly experience joy, and he was literally trapped inside the hide of a slaughtered animal. If the Dalai Lama had not been able to see the true nature of the master of Kung Fu, he probably would have just thrown the man in jail. After all, what use does a society have for such a person? Instead, the Dalai Lama invited him to the palace as his honored guest. He showed this man compassion because he could see his suffering. Yes, his suffering. The master of Kung Fu undoubtedly would have laughed out loud at the idea that he was suffering. After all, he was the best. He was the strongest, the fastest. He had defeated everyone who had come across his way. But often in life, we are oblivious to our own suffering. And it takes another person, someone who sees us as we truly are, someone who loves us fully, to see that we are hurting. Men are beginning to turn to each other. They are speaking to each other in heartbreaking language. One UU man asks, "What are we to do about the yearning, the emptiness, the hunger, the nothingness that huddles close to the core of human experience? What are we to do with the embarrassing awareness of the incompleteness of life? We are ashamed of our hunger." All around us are men who are tired of fighting and competing, men who want intimacy with other men, men who want to face their death with dignity and surrender, men who want to dance with the blossoming of life. All around us are men who want to step up and declare themselves to be the author of their own lives, not just actors playing from an old, worn-out script. This morning, we heard the voices of 10 men who stepped up, stepped forward to speak the first words of a new story about men. To finish this story, more and more women and more men must speak up and speak the words of truth. They must take risks. The two men in my seminary class took such risks, the risk of close engagement, the risk of intimate, difficult conversations. And the elderly dance master was willing to take a risk. He stepped up boldly, and he got very close, close enough to touch the master of Kung Fu right on the brow. May we be so bold. May we begin to tell brand new stories, like this one I heard from a UU man in Ohio. He's a young man. He's in his 30s, and he has just discovered that getting hugged by other men was, well, when he first did it, really uncomfortable. But then, as he did it some more, not so bad, and then finally, really incredible. To be held in a caring way by another man while crying about the hurts he had endured was the most incredible experience of his life. About a year before this man's father died, very, very unexpectedly, he decided to share his new hugging skills with his dad. So one day he walked into his father's house and he threw his arms around his neck to give him a big hug. And the father pulled away in surprise and said, "What the hell's wrong with you? You getting a little light in the loafers? I think you've been going to that Unitarian church way too long." Well, the son wasn't surprised, but he wasn't discouraged either. And so he would stop over 2 or 3 times a week to practice hugging his father. And his father acted really disgusted every time. But on the sly, his mother told him that when his father heard the car pulling up in the driveway, he would leap out of his chair and say, "Well, here he comes. I think he needs another hug." That man's father never told him he loved him in so many words. He couldn't. No man had said those words to him. But over time, the father's hugs got longer and softer, and occasionally their eyes would meet. Let us hold in our hearts fathers who long to say, "I love you," to their children. May they find their own way. Let us seek peace for those who have been hurt by men. May they find wholeness in the loving embrace of this community. And let ours be a community where we can see a multitude of ways to be a man in this world. May we open our hearts to the abundance of life that is all around us and available with just one kind touch. May it be so. Amen.